Hi, everybody. Thomas Stone here. I want to put out a quick podcast. I was drinking coffee at the kitchen table this morning and decided that I wanted to help to illustrate to my readers and listeners over the years why quantitative easing, QE, as a concept is such an effective means for bringing forth the New World Order. I think about quantitative easing and the path that the Federal Reserve chose back in 2008. So I want to give a little historical perspective here on the use of quantitative easing and its effectiveness in bringing about the circumstances that we now face today. So quantitative easing as a concept, and I've warned my readers going back to 2012 on Henry Mackow about its effectiveness, and that the investors, the investing community, had accepted and embraced quantitative easing. They saw the positive attributes of it. Obviously, it righted the ship in the asset markets. Real estate had bottomed out and began to turn up. The cheap money was flowing into the housing sector, and that's when the institutions began buying houses in bulk, right? Back in 2012. Also, at the time, gold had kind of topped out there at $1,900 an ounce, and the worst fears of an impending GFC 2.0 didn't come to fruition. The investors began to become more comfortable, and I had warned my readers that the asset markets would continue to reflect this. Hence, higher stock prices, higher asset prices, higher real estate prices. Now, we look at the timeline from 2009 when Ben Bernanke, the Federal Reserve Chairman, enumerated the policies of the Federal Reserve that effectively formulated the quantitative easing concept. We look at the timeline to today. I had warned my readers going back a long way from now, it's been 14 years, to be prepared for ever higher asset prices. Housing prices would go up. The stock market would continue to go up. I had warned back in 2015, 2016, I had in my shortwave show and in blog posts in my prior iterations to be prepared for Dow 40,000. And this was back, gosh, I guess 2017, 2018. And it was all because of the quantitative easing concept. We must never lose sight of this. And now we're looking at Dow 50,000 plus, S&P 7,000. These numbers are actually mind-blowing. But if you take the QE concept out long enough, you will get these numbers. You will get gold 5,000. You will get Dow 50,000. You will get house prices that are up 50% in the past 5 or 6 years. Rents continue to move higher. I gave an example of one of my rental properties on how much rents have gone up, which actually makes the investment basis of rental single-family rental properties still compelling, and which is why investors are still buying them, because they see yield. Even when they're borrowing at 6.5% money for the small investors and for other investors too, it still makes sense for them because the cash flow still flows in and the rents are continuing to rise. And that's all because of quantitative easing. Now, quantitative easing, and this is important to understand, quantitative easing was the path that the Federal Reserve and this establishment of the banking system decided to embark upon going back now 17 years. They could have chosen other routes. They could have done. They could have chosen to discount debt, repudiate debt, right? They could have taken other routes to address the problems of that caused the GFC 2008. Basically, the world had come to a denouement, a financial denouement. In that it was consuming more than 100% of the world's net savings rate. And so this is the path they chose. But I have to observe and relate to my listener here the ramifications of what quantitative easing does and the pernicious rot that it causes to the economy and to society as well. And first and foremost, what quantitative easing does is create long-term socioeconomic problems. What do I mean? Well, because of quantitative easing, asset prices naturally climb as morning precedes the night, right? Night becomes day. It's just a normal function. So those with the assets continue to enrich themselves, which is why I've always admonished my readers to buy the income-generating assets. But what it does is it creates the income, but mostly it creates the wealth divide, balance sheet wealth divide. And so you're going to see large differences between average household wealth and median household wealth. It's unbelievable. The median household wealth is probably about 25% of the value of median household wealth, which indicates, statistically speaking, that there are a few people, probably 5 to 10% of the population, that skew the average number much higher than the median. So basically, the bottom 80 to 90% of the population falls further behind in a standard of living and a balance sheet wealth from the top 20, but basically the top 10, 5, 1% of the population. Now, the Federal Reserve has teams of PhD economists. They know exactly what they're doing. They've been guiding this, and they have determined that quantitative easing is the path that they are going down. And that's all good. That's all fine and good. But the ramifications to society are horrible. However, I can't help but take a step back, look at quantitative easing, and say to myself, self, look at the damage it's caused to society. But when you have the compliant establishment media push forth the race narrative and the feminist narrative and the anti-Caucasian white male narrative, we can't help but see how quantitative easing works hand in glove with this. By creating the problems and the frictions in the socioeconomic order of the United States and the rest of the world, but truly in the West and predominantly here in the United States, it creates fertile ground for civil unrest. It creates fertile ground for instance, the blacks to capitalize on the white supremacy, pounding on the table in the establishment media. The race card continues to get quiet because they say it's the white man that's continuing to exploit the people. No, it's the problems created by quantitative easing. Blacks are going to naturally find it more difficult in this world, in this country here, the United States especially, to continue moving forward, because blacks traditionally don't own the assets. Blacks have traditionally a higher rate of renting their domicile versus owning. I think Caucasian Europeans own at least 80% of all single-family housing stock in the United States, which is much higher of a percentage than I think the 55 or 56 or 58% of Caucasians that are in this country. And it's because they see the value proposition. That's just the way Caucasians work. And, you know, you can say race all you want. But here's the thing. By creating the problems of quantitative easing with income and wealth disparities in the United States that continue to grow and manifest, we create the fertile groundwork for Marxist ideologies and for socialism and for race divides. Quantitative easing creates the necessary framework to bring about communism in the United States. Yes, we've been socialists since going back since shortly after the formation of the Federal Reserve in 1913. And the banking families that owned the Federal Reserve created the stock market crash of 1929 and all of the excess of the 1920s, which brought forth the election of their chosen Franklin Delano Roosevelt and brought about the New Deal and Social Security and all government regulation, Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, the seeds of ever higher house prices trace their origins back not just to the Federal Reserve, but even back to the institutionalization of the mortgage market and the de facto government backing. So it's a process that continues to this day. And so, yes, we've become gradually more and more socialist here in the United States. Khrushchev was indeed correct. But now the quantitative easing concept creates a strong framework from which the established oligarchy, the ruling oligarchy, to bring forth racism and race divides and the other movements that bring far left policies. It's a response, the crisis, the reaction, the solution. And so each step, and the longer that quantitative easing is used, the more likely you're going to have far left candidates, and the minorities become more and more vocal because they've been left out. People like, you know, if you've been owning the income generating assets this entire time, well, you've been doing well. Unfortunately, for a lot of the minorities, their much higher percentage of them have been left out because they're dependent on a wage. They don't own the assets. And so they're going to be looking for socialized housing. They're going to be looking for social policies that will help them. Unfortunately, to the detriment of the established asset owners, which basically are going to be you and me, which is why we're seeing calls for black reparations. These are just the natural results of quantitative easing as a concept. Like I said, as night becomes day, it's just a natural result. And so now that the Federal Reserve recently, a couple of months ago, recently announced quietly that they were going to not only discontinue shrinking their overall balance sheet, but they were going to commence buying $40 billion a month of Treasury securities. I told everybody, I said, listen, as a day comes from night, asset prices are going to continue climbing. And just when you think there's going to be a collapse or a retracement, there'll be some hand that steps in to continue buying. And that's because you're getting a $40 billion a month being injected into the system. But it's not just $40 billion a month. It's like a compounding effect, because the Treasury securities that are issued become negotiable debt instruments that people use to leverage out to buy more. So it's not just $40 billion being injected into the system. It's a leveraged $40 billion being injected into the system month in and month out. And I cannot overemphasize the importance of this to my readers and listeners. And that's why every time we see a retracement of a couple hundred points in the in the S&P 500, something mysteriously comes, some force. I'm not telling you that there's an intentional force. It's just a force of a wave of cash coming in. And they're going to continue, the Federal Reserve and the established oligarchy are going to continue using quantitative easing. And the results will be the wealth and income, but especially the wealth disparities will get so far out of control that Mayor Mondami of the New York City and the other far left areas will eventually find it in their will have enough support to bring in socialized housing. And socialized housing will be different than the socialized housing that was here when you had housing vouchers and the Section 8 housing back in Chicago and in Brooklyn and so forth like that, where it was just, you know, these monolithic ghetto communities with these skyscraper apartment complexes. This is different. This will be for the socialized housing, for instance, will be for the teachers, for the firefighters, for the first responders, for those who can no longer afford to purchase a house. It used to be on Long Island that the firefighters and the police would live in Suffolk County and Nassau County on Long Island and own a cheap house. They can no longer do that when the average house price in Nassau County is approaching, you know, $800,000, and they're maybe getting paid $100,000 tops to being a cop with overtime. So social housing will be where they have private and public trusts, and they will purchase the land and construct the buildings, and it will be for the middle class to live in. The middle class will no longer own their house, and it will be socialized, similar to what you would have in the former Soviet Union. And I always said that the goal of this establishment is to have a rental society in which the people do not own anything, and they know that a person who rents everything will have less stable family formation, will be less likely to be married, and less likely to have children. They'll have more of a shiftless society. But in social housing and social, in a social construct, in a framework in which the government has public-private trusts and partnerships, the people become hopelessly dependent on them and the government. And so these people won't talk back, so to speak. And it's all made possible because of the quantitative easing. The quantitative easing program brings about the necessary framework to see what we're experiencing today. It takes 14, 15, 16, 17 years to get to this point, but now we're at this point. Imagine another 5 or 6 years of quantitative easing. Imagine the wealth disparities that will persist and grow. Imagine what will happen. So there's no turning this around. The self-reinforcing, self-generating dynamic of quantitative easing will bring about these results. It will just come. So that's why I told you, own the income-generating assets. I wanted to just have this podcast and have this blurb to let my readers know how it all works. Right, the crisis, the reaction, the solution, the Hegelian dialectic, how each step brings about a new result, which brings a new solution and a synthesis, and a continual synthesis. And I estimate that unless the world ends and Father Yahweh comes back in his bodily flesh and returns again, it will continue this, and eventually I don't see any other solution. The end result will be a communist financial dictatorship. Yeah. All right, Thomas Stone out.